Thank you, thank you, thank you. Wow, wow, what a beautiful place. So nice to be here. The Majestic Theater in Boston. The subject of this special that I would like to present to the world is called The Power of Intention. The word intention, usually when we use this word, it has sort of a connotation meaning nobody's going to get in the way. I intend for something to happen. I'm going to make this work no matter what. Regardless of whatever opposition I encounter, I intend to make it happen. It's like being a pit bull who's got a hold of a tire. Have you ever seen that? And they're just not going to let go. I'm going to have this pit bull attitude that I'm going to make something happen. That's what intention is. I'd like to offer here to you something that may change the way you look at things completely in terms of this idea of intention. Rather than thinking of intention as something that you are going to do, because the implication behind that is that this is the ego. This is the ego at work. And the part of me that says, I am going to make it happen. I've come to a place in my life now at the age of 63 where I finally realized that I don't write the books, that there's an energy that is working through me, whether you call it source or God or spirit. It doesn't make any difference what you call it. But this energy that is working builds all the bridges and writes all the books and delivers all the speeches. When I was standing back there waiting for the introduction to come out and to begin this program, the words were running through my mind from something I read years ago in A Course in Miracles. It said, if you knew who walked beside you at all times on this path that you have chosen, you could never experience fear or doubt again. If you had this knowing that there was a source, that there was something that was available to you that is responsible for all of it. And in the writing of The Power of Intention, I remember sitting down to start this book on a specific day. Happened to have been Pearl Harbor Day, December the 7th. And I sat down and I put my left hand on the table and I just surrendered and I let go and I allowed the words to flow through my heart and onto the page. And I don't write with a computer. I don't have one. Can't afford it. I have 8 children and they all need one for some reason. And I don't have, all of the fancy kinds of, I don't even have a typewriter. I just allow the words to come through me onto the page. And as I was sitting there and allowing this to happen, I began to realize that there was something greater going on here. And as the days went by and as I wrote each day, getting up early in the morning, and I did this years and years ago when I first started speaking. I used to speak with notes and have everything all very carefully written out and so on. And there came a time when I could no longer do that. I just had to speak from my heart, which is exactly what I'm doing here with you today in this program. And when you surrender to this, when you begin to allow this force in the universe to work through you, you begin to realize that everything that shows up here in this world shows up from a source, from a place, from an energy, from a field, whatever you want to call it, and that we and these sort of piddly little egos of ours that believe that we're so important and whether I get it done right or whether I don't or whether I get it done on time or whether he does it or she does it or whatever, all of these details become almost something that occupies too much of the energy of our lives. And when you learn to surrender and to let go and to realize that intention isn't necessarily something that I do, but something that I connect to. And I'd like to share with you here at the opening a couple of observations, a couple of quotes that I came across as I was preparing to write this book. The first of these quotes is from a person who's been a very powerful and important influence in my life. His name was Carlos Castaneda. And Castaneda, particularly in his later books, in his book Fire from Within and The Power of Silence and The Active Side of Infinity, he spoke about intention not as something that we do, but as something that we connect to. I included this particular observation of Castaneda's in the writing of The Power of Intention because it was this particular quote that really inspired me to write this book and to produce this program and to be here with you today. And as like everything else in my life, I almost feel as if I'm no longer the one in charge. I don't even know how it was handed to me. And when I read the words, I had them laminated and I wrote them out carried them around with me and ultimately knew I was going to write a book about them, about this idea, and I was going to produce a program about it. And here's what the quote says. In the universe, there is an unmeasurable, indescribable force which those who live of the source, in quotes, of the source, and of the source means sorcerer. Now, not sorcerer in the word, when we think of sorcerer, we think of witches and incantations and all kinds of hocus pocus and so on. That's not what the word sorcerer means. It means of the source, those who live of the source. In the universe, there is an unmeasurable and indescribable force which those who live of the source call intention. And that absolutely everything that exists in the entire cosmos is attached to intent by a connecting link. And then he goes on to say, sorcerers are not only concerned with understanding and explaining that connecting link, but they are especially concerned with cleansing it of the numbing effects brought about by all of the concerns of living at ordinary levels of consciousness. Very important and powerful words to consider. Think of it like this, that everything in this universe was intended here, including you, including every mosquito and every palm tree and every avocado and all of the Rocky Mountains and the oceans, that everything that shows up in the material world emanates from a source. And this source can be thought of as that which intends things into the material world. And the question here today isn't whether or not you are going to be connected to it, because you couldn't be listening to this program. You couldn't be processing what I'm saying here if you weren't connected to this field. This field beats your heart. This field of energy grows your fingernails and grows everybody else's fingernails. I used to say it grows your hair, but I've become a little suspicious of that, you know. But this, it animates all life. Now, this is one observation, that intention is what I'd like you to think of when I think about the power of intention. Intention isn't about whether you're going to connect to it. You're already connected to it. The question is, how rusty, how corroded, how dirty is the link between you and this field of intention? And sorcerers are those who are concerned with cleansing this connecting link so that you become more and more in rapport with or in harmony with this field of intention. And the more you're in harmony with this field of intention, the more you are able to do all that this field of intention is able to do. You are able to create miracles. You are able to heal yourself. You are able to attract into your life the abundance that has been missing. You are able to find the right people and have them show up exactly on time. Because that's how the universal source from which all things and all people originated, that's how it works. And what we're going to be doing here today in this program is looking at how to get that link back to intention and to not only be connected to it, but to always be ready to keep that connecting link clean, uncorroded. I came across another quote. Now, Castaneda is considered by many to be a metaphysician, if you will, an anthropologist who got into the world of sorcery and higher consciousness through what we call like spiritual literature and so on. There's another man whose observations I came across that I want to share with you. And his name is Max Planck. Now, you may be saying, who is Max Planck? Max Planck was given the Nobel Prize in Physics many years ago in Stockholm for his work on the atom. He, along with Einstein, was considered to be one of the greatest scientific minds on the planet. Now, these are the people who need hardcore data. They don't want to hear about hocus pocus and sorcerers and connecting to intention and all of these kind of things. It has to be something they can measure, they can see. These are the people who are what we call operating out of the left brain. And that is not in any way a criticism. It's something that allows us to make great scientific explorations and advances, of course, as people. And the study of the atom is something that can be used not only to make atomic bombs, but it can also be used to power all of the needs that we have on the planet for energy if it were put into the proper context. So, here's what Max Planck had to say. As he accepted the Nobel Prize, these were his words. As a man who has devoted his whole life to the most clear-headed science, to the study of matter, I can tell you, as the result of my research about atoms, this much. There is no matter as such. All matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force which brings the particle of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system of the atom together. We must assume, now listen to a greatest scientist on the planet, we must assume behind this force the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter. Now, that is very, very powerful evidence. One of the things that really intrigues me is this idea, and I heard it many, many years ago. I'm not even sure of the original source where I heard it, but it goes like this. When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Albert Einstein once observed that you have the most fundamental and major decision that you have to make in your life is this. Do I live in a friendly or a hostile universe? Which is it? Is it a universe that is filled with hostility and anger and people wanting to hate each other and people wanting to kill each other? Is that what you see? Because when you see the world that way, that's exactly what you will create for yourself in your life. This is from great scientific minds. And the interesting thing is that this is not just a clever play on words, that when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. It's actually a very scientific thing, and I'm going to show you that in just a moment. I'd like you to imagine the following scene. You're in your house. You've got your car keys in your hand. The lights go out. Power failure. You can't see a thing. You stumble around in your living room, and you drop your keys. And you look around for a moment and you realize that you're never going to find them in the dark. But you look outside and you notice that the streetlights are on. So in your mind, a light bulb goes off. I'm not going to sit around here in the dark and grope around looking for my keys when there's a light on outside. I'm going to go out here under the streetlight and I'm going to look for my keys. Why are you laughing? This makes a lot of sense. So you're out here, and you're groping around, and you're looking for your keys, and you're looking and looking, and your neighbor comes along and says, "What happened, Wayne?" "Well, I dropped my keys." "Oh, I'll help you look for them." And the two of us are now down here looking for our keys. And looking, finally he says to me, "Excuse me, but where did you drop your keys?" "Well, I dropped them in the house." He said, "You mean to tell me that you dropped your keys in the house, and you're looking for them out here in the streetlight? Doesn't make any sense." And I said, "Well, it doesn't make any sense to grope around in the dark when there's light out here." Now you laugh and you think how silly that is, but isn't that exactly what we do when we have a problem, a difficulty, a struggle that is located inside and we're looking for the solution outside? someplace outside of ourselves. It would be like going to the doctor and telling him all of your symptoms. And the doctor says, oh, boy, you've got a lot of symptoms. And he starts writing out prescriptions. You need a prescription for this symptom. You need a prescription for that symptom. And finally, he gets this four or five, and you go to walk out, and you say, well, I'd like my prescription. She says, no. I'll give this one to your mother-in-law, and I'll give this one to your neighbor, and I'll give this one to your daughter, and I'll give this one to your father. I mean, you're the one with the struggles and with the difficulties. And giving, expecting somebody else to change or something outside of you to get better in order for you to make your life work at this level that I'm calling intention is something you have to really take a hard look at. It's in here. We have to see, the question isn't whether I'm connected to this field of intention. The question is, how ready am I to keep that connecting link absolutely corrosion free? Now, I used to ask the question many years ago from studying philosophy and teaching it for many years, Who am I? I'm pretty much at peace with that now. I really think that who I am is a piece of the divine source, disguised as an author and a father and a writer and someone who delivers these kinds of talks and so on. It's all a disguise. I remember when someone asked Mother Teresa, what do you do every day in the streets of Calcutta? She had a wonderful, profound answer. She said, every day I see Jesus Christ in all of his distressing disguises. I see the unfolding of Source, the unfolding of God, the unfolding of Spirit in all that I encounter. And I see it in myself as well. And I see that and know that. That's not the question that bugged me the most. The one that puzzled me the most is, where did I come from? Where did I come from? You ever ask yourself that question? I used to ponder that. I can remember I lived in a series of foster homes for a while when I was a young boy, until I was about 9. And I lay out in Mount Clemens, Michigan, I would lay out on the grass, and I would look up, and I'd see these endless stars. There was an apple orchard out there. And I could just lie there on my back, and I'd just look up, and I'd say, Where did I come from? And it's not about reincarnation. I always liked Eleanor Roosevelt's response when they asked her if she believed in reincarnation. She said, I don't think it would be any more bizarre for me to show up in another lifetime than it was for me to show up in this one. It always kind of made sense to me. It's hard to figure all of this out. But where did I come from? Where did I come from? So you ask yourself this perplexing question, where did I come from? And most of us, when we think about that question, we come up with an answer. And the answer is, as hard as it is for us to even imagine, our parents did it. It's a tough one. But in one blissful moment, one drop of human protoplasm in some mysterious way collided with another, and life began at this in this microscopic dot. Now, I used to I can remember years ago we had 4 children in 7 years, and my teenage daughter Stephanie at that time was she had to take on a lot of the helping responsibilities around the house when these babies just kept showing up. And we found out that we were going to have another child. Another mysterious thing happened. And another child was on its way. And my wife and I flipped a coin to decide who would tell Stephanie. And I lost. So I cornered her one day when she was in a really good mood. And I said, honey, you're not going to believe this, but we're going to have another baby. Oh, that's great. And her hands went. Instant pose. This is it. This foot here, this one out here. That's terrific. I said, well, it really is. I said, and you should probably be glad that we didn't have the same attitude that you have when we found out about you. She said, yes, but how do you think it feels? I said, well, why don't you tell me? She said, no, Dad, how do you think it feels to be the only kid in junior high school who has parents who like to do it? And I said, Seth, I know this is going to be hard for you to accept, but Grandma and Grandpa do it. That is just sick. That's all I know. She's storming out of there, huh? So when we think about where we come from, that sort of is the place that we get to in our heart. But just go back to that moment for a second and understand that, remember what I said earlier, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Just keep that idea in mind. Because if you go back to the time of your absolute beginning into the material world, you know that there was a microscopic dot. And this microscopic dot included everything that you needed for this physical journey. And you can't even see it with a microscope. It's just too mysterious and too mystical to even contemplate, isn't it? That something as tiny as you could get a million of them on the head of a pin contains everything that you needed for this physical journey. Everything. Your birth was in there. The shape of your eye is in there. Your height is in there. The color of your skin is in there. I hold a hair up on the pillow and say, I've had this experience several million times. What held it in yesterday? And you must ask that question, like, what held them up yesterday, don't you? Or why was it black yesterday and it's gray today? Where did that one come from, or whatever? And all of these changes are in this microscopic dot. So what I'd like to do just for a few seconds here is to go back, to take the microscopic dot that is your beginnings, in which there's a future pull that is created every face and every body and everything in here and everyone out there watching today in that one instant miraculous moment. Everything that you needed for this physical journey was in there. Too hard to comprehend, you just accept it. So now we take the dot and we look at the dot and we say, let's find the origin of the dot that began me. And you put it under a microscope and you turn up the magnification. And what you see in as you turn up this magnification is you see molecules. And inside of those molecules are mostly particles. And these particles are all flitting about. And there's mostly just empty spaces in there. And you take one of these particles out and we call them atoms. And you put this atom looking for your source, looking for where you began. And you put it under another atomic microscope, turn up the magnification even stronger. And what do you discover as you turn up the magnification? You discover that it's just more empty spaces and more particles with new names. Protons, electrons, neutrons, protons, whatever you want to call them, right? We memorized them in junior high school, right? So you take one of these electrons and you're just looking for your source. Where did I come from? You turn up the magnification on this electron microscope and what do you see? More spaces and more particles, all flitting about, a dance, this huge dance. And you take one of those and you turn up the magnification and what you have are new particles with new names called quarks. We're now looking at quantum physics, the study of the behavior of matter at the tiniest, tiniest, tiniest levels. And we're just looking for our source. So finally we take one of those quarks and these quarks are really weird. My friend Deepak Chopra has often said to me, Wayne, he said, quantum physics is not only stranger than you think it is, it's stranger than you can think. Because you take a tiny little subatomic particle and observe it, and the fact is that the nature of your observing changes what you're observing. If you look at it in a certain way, it becomes one thing. If you turn away, it becomes something else. It's truly a scientific fact that when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And now you take this tiny little subatomic particle, and you take it and you put it in a particle accelerator and you rev up the speed of these things and collide them at 250,000 miles per hour. You collide them. You open up the particle accelerator looking for your source and guess what's in there? Nothing. No thing. that the dot that began you originated from a field of energy that has no boundaries, no beginnings, no ends. It's infinite. It's an infinite potential. And the question that I have for you is, if you can get this, that you didn't begin with that particle because particles themselves do not create more particles. St. Paul put it this way in the New Testament, that which is seen hath not come from that which doth appear. They talked a little strange in those days, all right? What that means is that everything that we see in the material world doesn't originate in the material world. It's the spirit that gives life. The flesh counts for nothing. If the shape of your eye can be in an energy field that has no boundaries, no form, no materialness to it, why not the shape of your life? Why not the everything that you are destined to become, why can't that be a part of this energy field as well? That you showed up here from a field that I call intention. And that beautiful globe that is here to my left, to your right, is what I am going to call, for the rest of this program, I am going to call this the source from which we all originated. That every particle that shows up on this planet, and that's what Max Planck said, and that's what Carlos Castaneda said, and that's what every metaphysician said, that's what all of the great spiritual teachings on this planet say, that our source is spirit. It is something other than the physical. And if you had a set of magical binoculars, and you could look at that field, what I'm going to describe in this program is what that field would look like. And my suggestion to you here is this, that you are going to, if you want to understand intention and the power of intention, it means suspending your ego, the part of you that believes that you are separate from this source, because that's where all of our problems originated, all of our struggles, even our illnesses. This is a source of well-being. Everything that emanates from this source emanates from a field of well-being. It looks like something. It sounds like something. One of the things that it sounds like, I took from one of the great spiritual traditions in the universe. It's from the Bhagavad Gita, what is called the Hindu holy book, the Song of the Lord. But you can look in any spiritual tradition, whether it's Christianity, whether it's Judaism, whether it's Zoroastrianism or whatever, and basically they all say the same thing. If this source that we call God or soul or spirit, if it could speak, this is what it would sound like. And then later on, I'm going to talk to you about what it looks like. What does it look like? I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. That's what it sounds like. Everything emanates from me. So that means you. And that's why the words, with God all things are possible, means that when you find in your heart a way to reconnect to this, and remember what I talked about in those opening quotes, that this field of intention is a field that is only corroded because we take on something that separates us from the source. And that is called the ego. And the ego is really nothing more than an idea that we carry around. It's the source of virtually all of our problems. The only difficulty is you can't check into a hospital. Like if you've got an appendix problem, you check in, get an appendectomy. There's no place that I know of that gives egoectomies. It would be nice, but it doesn't work that way. So that what you want to do is figure out a way to get rid of this idea that who I am is separate from this. And this is your source. And when you reconnect to your source, live in harmony with your source, you are connecting to the field of intention. And when you're with this field of intention, everything that this field of intention from which all material worlds emanate, everything that it can do You can do because you are it and it is you. The problem that we have is we've come to a place where we believe that we are separate from it. And so we start to believe that I am what I do. And I am what I have. And I am separate from everybody else. And I am my reputation. And I'm separate from what is missing in my life. But this field from which all things originate, if it's everywhere, it's got to be in you. And if it's everywhere and it has to be in you, it has to also be in everything that you perceive to be missing from your life. It has to be in that too, because there's no place that it's not. And if there's no place that it's not, you literally are already connected to everything that you would like to attract into your life. What keeps you from doing it is your belief that you're separate from your source. We want to reconnect to this source. People ask me the question, what about a free will? If I was intended here, and the shape of my life was intended here from this source, where does that leave me with a free will? Well, where it leaves you with a free will is this. You have a free will to decide whether or not you are going to connect or not connect to that source. That's your free will. If you make a choice, a conscious choice, to stay disconnected from it and believe that you are all of these things that I just illustrated in the ego, this field of intention doesn't know anything about non-well-being. It creates from a source of well-being. It doesn't know anything about fear, about anxiety, about worry. It just is in a constant state of creating. There's a quotation that goes like this. Self-realization, which is really reconnecting to your source. Self-realization means that we have been consciously connected with our source of being. We are reconnected to this source, which I'm going to describe in detail in this program, what I believe the faces of intention look like. Once we have made this connection, then absolutely nothing can go wrong. That's from Swami Paramananda. Nothing can go wrong when you reconnect to source. All of our struggles, all of our illnesses, all of the scarcities in our life, all of the problems we have in our relationships, all of this stuff came about because we disconnected ourselves from a field of intention that is nothing but just well-being at work. It only wants you to be in a state of happiness.